I'm absolutely glad that I have the members of Blood Incantation here, Isaac, Paul, Maurice and Jeff. And yesterday you had your first of two shows at the Roadband Festival. It was you played the whole record Time Wave Zero. And I always thought that it would be the first time you played ever live, but it isn't like this, isn't it?
The second time. The first time was the album release show 2 years ago in Denver, where we live. But this is the first time playing it for a massive audience and first international appearance.
Okay. And you looked really concentrated on stage. So how was it for you?
Well, we were very much in the zone. We had a full day of practice before to get used to the equipment that we didn't bring that was provided by the festival, which was a massive undertaking. A big thank you to them. But yeah, it was a great feeling on stage. We were all very much concentrated in the zone. It was easier to play than it had ever been before. So I think the show was really good.
It requires a significant amount of nonverbal communication because we're not playing with any MIDI. None of the synths are synchronized, and we have to listen through the monitor mix and the visual cues of the other people to play with each other, because we're often playing with each person with both hands, and so we are moving these really big chords with the counterpoint melody and whatnot, and we have to move it as one big organism, or it will be very jarring, and you'll hear that we're not playing together, whereas with a death metal set... You have a literal metronome blasting as loud as it can go at all times, so you can very easily hear where you are in the song. And if you make a mistake on the guitar, just listen to the drum beat and jump back in the next time. But when there isn't a drum beat, and it's...
And less no distortion to cover up any mistakes.
So you have to really concentrate.
Okay. So you were also really free yesterday, theoretically.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a different feeling to play... music that is very, the whole point is less is more, so it lets you kind of get in the zone and kind of, as opposed to in the metal set, you know, you're kind of firing all cylinders, and we were kind of joking last night that, you know, at a metal show you have all that adrenaline, but you're like getting it all out, whereas when you're doing the synth set, it's all that adrenaline is just kind of sitting there inside of you, so you have to, you know, allow yourself to kind of get into it in a different way. So it's like a different energy for sure.
I do want to say about the free comment. Yesterday we played without a timer. And the first time we played the album 2 years ago, we had timers, each of us, to keep track. Because, you know, we have the map at home of where the changes are and when the different parts come in. And we're like, after 11 minutes or 7 minutes, you go here, and then 4 minutes of this and yada yada to try to keep it compact. But the last couple practices in the past few weeks back home, we forewent the timers at all. And we used to have a big one on the screen on the computer, you know. And we just started kind of doing it more intuitively. And it stretched them out a little bit. It made them, like, if you listen to what we did yesterday and the album, it's a little bit longer. But it gelled really well because no one's in a rush. You don't have that subconscious focusing on the clock. But, you know, we also, luckily, we had done it enough times that we didn't go too far over the limit and take up the whole set.
It was actually timed completely perfectly. And we, unaware to us, we just, like, knew by the moment, what was happening with the songs. We were ended maybe, what, 2 or 3 minutes early?
3 minutes early of our total allocated set, including the encore or extra set.
Okay. When I listened the first time to Time Wave Zero, I was really, how can I explain... I mean, before you were known as a death metal band, and I thought, yeah, that's a really cool intro, and it never stopped. And I said, shit, this isn't the intro, this is the whole record. And the thing I really love about the record is the sound. It's not only just the composition, which is pretty well made, but the overall sound of the instruments. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely beautiful. So how did you achieve this crazy sound?
Well, it comes from a few different aspects, and I would say one of them is that we tune to 432 instead of 440, which is, there's a lot of cosmic kind of ideas about how the tuning of modern instruments was changed maybe to heighten and brighten, you know, the way that we hear music, and that the original tuning before that was a more kind of like grounded, intuitive sound. So there's that. And then we also did it all analog, which, you know, a lot of stuff these days is not doing that as much. So we did it like our metal records that we had done before that. We did it all live to tape. You know, no click tracks, none of that stuff.
As
and
a group.
As a group, as we would do live. And so it has that kind of organic sound. And the analog synthesizers that we use, which have these really warm sounds, recording them to tape, it enhances that, you know, even more.
I would also like to add the addition of the acoustic instruments with the synthesizers really brings out a cool resonance between the two. And it's not very often that you have the culmination of both sides of this synthesis and this acoustic sound. So I think it is rather unique.
And I also read in another interview that it was planned from the beginning that your third record will be an ambient record. Is that true?
Yeah.
Okay.
Easy. We have a lot of long-range plans. Blood and Condition will seldom do something in the public eye that hasn't been really thought out and strategized for possibly years in advance.
Okay. To that point, Time Wave Zero really marks, let's say, the top of a pyramid for us, you know, is the ultimate, like, trifecta in terms of what we're trying to do. You know, we had the demo, sure, Starspawn, Hidden History, and then this third record really opened up the gates for us to do anything now. It was an essential piece of our history.
Okay.
Yeah, Blood and Condition is not simply a death metal band that is cool on the internet. It's just Blood Incantation. It's these four crazy people making crazy music. And, you know, you can't make a shirt that says crazy music for crazy people, so we have the cosmic music for cosmic people. But.
Well, and Paul and I, when we first started the band, there was a point early on where we were jamming some kind of different types of stuff, which ended up becoming Hidden Species on Starspawn. And originally we were kind of like, oh, is this too weird for our band? And we were like, no, like, this is kind of what we want this band to be, is to break the boundaries of what we expect from a death metal band, quote unquote. And that was already like very, very early on.
Yeah, it was over 10 years. Morris was living in Ecuador. We had recorded the Interdimensional Extinction demo in July 2013, and then Morris was living in Ecuador for like three months, a long time. And so we had the demo songs, which didn't end up being released for over 2 years. And then we had this Hidden Species track, and we had like a Dropbox folder that was like secret death metal project, you know? And everybody we asked, like, hey, should this be like some BI full-length material? And they all said, no, don't ruin what you got going. The demo's going to come out. It's going to be cool. It's sick, you know, interdimensional style. That's all we needed to hear, is that this is absolutely going to be the Starspawn style.
Yeah, and from there, it was just kind of like, you know, the ambient and like other forms of music, like not just ambient, quote-unquote, but like, you know, left of field, krautrock, prog, like all those things were things that Paul and I and then all of us, you know, when we were really getting into the meat of the band, were kind of like, yeah, we all love this stuff. And it's
and also not just not
different
metal, but like funeral doom, black metal, exactly. 80s heavy metal, speed metal type stuff. Like,
it's like, yeah, there's not one thing. And, you know, maybe it's because we're all ADD or something, but like, you know, we just don't want to repeat ourselves, and we don't want to do something that we've already done. We want to do something, you know, like all of our favorite artists or people who push themselves each time, and they're not going to do the same thing over and over again. So, like,
even if we don't, you know, even if each one of these albums that we respect from these artists doesn't really float our boat, we inherently respect the ambition and the creative arc to keep pushing themselves in their own vision. This is the type of band we've always wanted to be, and thus far, we have yet to repeat ourselves. And the jump from the demo to the first album was pretty substantial. The second album is like the most professional, concise version of the first album. Then we have an ambient album. Then we did the maxi single, which is, you know, it starts death metal and becomes ambient. And then the other song starts ambient and becomes metal. And it's like this, we're presenting this sort of like, it's called Luminescent Bridge on purpose. It's taking the audience and the band in this intermediary period to prepare them for the actual third record, fourth album, third record, which is an ultimate synthesis of everything that Blood and Condition does, which means every genre you've heard Blood and Condition play thus far, every snippet is now maximized times 10 and condensed into the most potent little dollop that we've ever been close to making.
To back to the point of like not repeating ourselves, take an artist you really like, someone with a massive discography, you know, to go through the whole thing and find influence from records that you didn't even know existed or aren't even the best, I think is the ultimate show of being a fan of a band. You go through the whole thing. They may not all be 10 out of 10 albums, but you'll find ideas in there that are like, oh, wow, they still got it. Or, wow, I can use this. Or, wow, we can use this part of our band from this weird unknown record by, like, say, even Pink Floyd, you know. Massive bands have long discographies of crazy cool shit. And to go through it and put it into your own art, I think, is essential for anyone trying to follow in the footsteps of all those great bands.
Yeah, it's not enough to simply try to emulate one great record from a great band. You know, plenty of bands succeed well enough at doing just that, and I know plenty of people think that we're just a Morbid Angel cover band, but, you know, even Morbid Angel made records that didn't repeat, you know. They did it from the beginning. Like, people, there was a pushback for their second album, you know, and then they didn't revert. They went even further down their own path into Covenant and then ended up making something like Formulas after being a band almost 15 years, you know. And some people back then, it was a big fork in the road for Morbid fans, and people were like on this team or that team or whatever. And it wasn't until some bands in the last 10 years got a lot of traction out there that people started really appreciating Formulas. Nowadays, it's like an esteemed classic. Everyone's like, it's a masterpiece. It's one of the best records. But in 2011, that was not the case. You could buy a Formulas tour shirt on eBay for $11. Mm-hmm. Only bitter, because everyone was like, "Oh, I don't want to wear that. That's not their good album." You know. Mm-hmm. Now look at the world.
Interesting. I would like to have a 70s prog version of Blood Incantation in the future. So.
Listen to it. Okay. Based on the passes you got to Star Rider, you know Niklas Malmquist plays on a new album.
Okay.
He flew from Sweden to Hansa Studios in Berlin, and he recorded with us. Cool. And the Star Rider is literally playing 70s prog, mini Moog, harmonized solo, string, synth, and mellotron, piano, Rhodes, all over the 70s prog.
David Bowie's piano. Cool.
David Bowie's piano, the one. Also, Thorsten Quaschning from Tangerine Dream is on the album.
Okay.
Nice. Significantly, you know, with the, he used the actual tape reel in the Mellotron sampler, because this is before Mellotron came back. So he has the Mimatron, which is like a sampler based version of it, but the tape loop that he put in as the sample for the Mellotron sound is Edgar Froese's actual Mellotron tape reel that they used on Phaedra and Rubicon, and it's you will hear 70s Blood Incantation.
Cool.
You will, absolutely.
I'm running a little bit out of time. Just a last question. I saw on YouTube a video that you participated at What's in My Bag, mm-hmm. in this record store. Picked some really interesting records.
Mm-hmm. They didn't let us finish. We all picked
them. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Can't imagine. And I just wondered if you could do it in a bookstore, what would you like to pick spontaneously?
Typically, I buy books for two reasons. One is reading a book. And the other is for art. Like, I'll buy a book. Unfortunately, I have thousands of books that are just for one thing I found in it, where I'm like, oh, I can use this as a tape cover, you know, and whether or not I get around to reading that particular book is secondary to my use of it for the art. And sometimes I'll keep it for 10, 15 years, and then finally the right project will present itself. But I generally try to find books on, you know, New Age metaphysical type of stuff, you know, magic, esoteric, occultist stuff, but also, like, ancient stuff, like and the history of Sumer and Iraq, or like you know, the Mesopotamian cultures, or like the Mesoamerican cultures, and like the prehistoric, you know, pre-colonial time periods within, you know, the pyramids and the mound building, and like the shamanistic psychedelic, you know, cultures that were permeating around the world. This is very fascinating to me still, so I'll buy mostly that type of stuff.
Okay.
But I mean, I typically go for like old sci-fi and horror novels and stuff, stuff like Ursula K. Le Guin and stuff like that, Clive Barker, like that sort of stuff, and similar, like with art and different things like that. But yeah, I I find myself gravitating more towards like fiction, typically.
I'm currently looking for the book about Blue Note, the record label. I'm not sure the publishing company's name, but it's released. I guess it's more of a coffee table book, but there's tons of really cool information in there about the label that people hadn't known before, and tons of pictures of people like Grant Green and Wes Montgomery playing at the club that had never been published before.
Okay. How'd you?
Pretty much any art books, and I've been leaning towards either artists recommended fiction or stuff that is influencing like certain movies or even video games and stuff. Like those stories are just as important as any other. I'm trying to learn more, and I don't know, a lot of different things are pretty interesting and are worth the time if you have it.
Okay, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And have a good second show.
Thank you. Looking forward to
see
it.
See you there.